DAL Files, the ultimate Cowboys podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It is time for the big interview to talk about the Cowboys. And to do so, we bring in from 105.3 in Dallas, Jared Sandler. You find him on Twitter at SandlerJ. As we get started, Jared, have you already gone ahead and put Dak Prescott in the Hall of Fame? Or I'm just trying to figure out where you stand with the golden god that is Dak Prescott so far for the Cowboys.
Well, it's funny, in the Metroplex, there have been about five or six different athletes who have already been inducted in the Hall of Fame from different sports because of one game or a meaningless group of games like Dak Prescott's performances so far in preseason. But it is crazy. I think that Dak is the shiny new toy that Cowboys fans haven't had in a while, and that's a young quarterback that has upside. The Cowboys have had backup quarterbacks who have been veterans who are just there to kind of hold a place or failed late-round draft picks. And I think there's some hope that Dak Prescott offers. But for the people who honestly think, and they do exist in Dallas, that the Cowboys could run the table with Dak Prescott as their quarterback, they are absolutely certified insanity. That is certified insanity. The guy's done well in games that don't matter. We'll see how he does if he gets the opportunity this year in games that do matter.
The overall impact that you expect on this roster out of a guy like Ezekiel Elliott?
Oh, well, he's huge because of the versatility. Now, we'll see him tonight for the first time. You know, the only things we know about Zeke are what we've heard from practices and obviously his career at Ohio State. But he just offers a ton of versatility, not only as a runner but as a pass catcher. And really, I think, with added significance because of the fragility of Tony Romo as a protector, as a guy who's able to pick up blitzes. I think there were like over 200 or some odd blitz opportunities while he was at Ohio State, and he successfully picked up all but two. So this guy is outstanding for what he can do and in the box score, but I think they really love what he can do out of things that don't show up in the box score. And the offense in general should be a strength for the Cowboys, and specifically that running game with Zeke and Alfred Morris is something that a lot of people believe will open things up for Tony Romo and also keep defenses honest and maybe help contribute to Tony Romo's long-term health this season.
Jared, do you think they need to try to watch his carry count at all, or do you think you just release the hounds?
Well, you know, it's interesting because they do have depth at that spot. Again, with Alfred Morris, and if they do choose to keep Darren McFadden, you got three really capable running backs. You know, McFadden was one of the top rushers in the league last year, and a lot of people want to attribute that to the Cowboys' offensive line, and there's certainly truth and honesty in that sentiment. But Darren McFadden, when healthy, is pretty capable. So I think they'll be able to keep Zeke fresh throughout the duration of the season with that depth. As far as long-term and looking out for Zeke's future, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road beyond his first contract, you know, I think they really are committed to trying to win within the Romo window, even though they've made some decisions that don't necessarily suggest that, like drafting Jalen Smith in the second round, a guy who might not play this season, might not play ever, but they do seem committed to winning in the near future. So I think they're going to use Zeke for all he's worth, and at the end of his contract, if they feel like he's worth, for another 3-4 years, then they'll make that decision then. But I do think it is, you know, as you bring up, keeping him fresh throughout the season, especially as a rookie running back. He's about to play a longer year of football than any year he's ever played. I think they do have the horses in the backfield to keep him fresh if they choose to do that. Though we did see a few years ago, different situation. They really rode DeMarco Murray hard, and you know, maybe they had it in their mind they weren't going to bring him back anyway. They ultimately didn't. But we have seen Scott Linehan and Jason Garrett ride one guy in the backfield. I think this is a different situation because of the depth they have. And again, Zeke is a rookie, and I think they are going to be sensitive to that.
Jared Sandler, 105.3 in Dallas, my guest on the podcast here to talk about the Cowboys. Jared, sticking on the offensive side of things, what kind of season do the Cowboys need to have at, say, wide receiver two, wide receiver three, to be able to take some pressure off of Dez Bryant?
Yeah, you know, that they were really exposed in that regard last year when Dez was hurt. So I think the sentiment there is that, you know, if Dez is on the field, it obviously makes everyone around him better. Now, they got Cole Beasley. I don't know that he's a household name around the league. I think maybe fantasy football players, especially in deeper leagues, are more familiar with him. But, you know, he's a really, really dangerous asset out of the slot. He's a little guy, kind of a scat back type body, but they don't really ever line him up out of the backfield. And he's a great compliment, but what they really need is for a second receiver to step up. Last year, they hoped Terrence Williams would be that guy, and he really failed when given the opportunity to be the number one guy when Dez Bryant went down. But he did show flashes when Dez was alongside him of growth and continued success. One guy who has turned some heads is Bryce Butler. Bryce Butler started his college career at USC. It didn't work out there. He transferred and then started his NFL career with the Raiders and had some good games there, but the consistency just didn't exist. Well, Bryce Butler joined the Cowboys last year. He's an incredible freak athlete. He's one of these guys that is going to get opportunities because of the 40 or the combine type stuff, the numbers, the speed, the size. He's had a good preseason so far, a really good preseason, actually, and some people believe that he might step up and be the number two wide receiver. But whether it's him or Terrence Williams, I think it would really benefit the Cowboys to have a guy step up. Though with Cole Beasley and some of the athleticism the Cowboys can throw out of the backfield with a guy like Lance Dunbar, too, they should have a really versatile passing attack, maybe something that's not the traditional type passing attack that we've seen here over the last few years.
Switching over to the defensive side of things, it appears that this secondary is better. Now, some of that can just be because you get a year under your belt, but what's your take on this Dallas secondary and whether or not they have actually made the strides they need to for 2016?
Yeah, well, health is obviously a big part of this, especially for a guy like Morris Claiborne. You know, he hasn't really developed the way that they thought he would as a really high draft pick, but, you know, he's kind of become a solid player when healthy, and Orlando Scandrick missed all of last year with an ACL injury. Having him back, I think, will be a huge asset. He kind of established himself prior to the injury as a guy who would shut down receivers in the slot, and I think they're going to use him in a similar role. Brandon Carr, another big name, a guy that wasn't a high draft pick by the Cowboys but got a huge contract from the Cowboys. Again, he's just kind of been solid. So I think health is key, but then you look at the secondary. Byron Jones is a safety. If he is, in fact, this team's starting free safety, this is a guy whose growth and, you know, having another year under his belt could really pay big dividends. The Cowboys love this guy. He's an incredible athlete. There's still some questions whether he is a better fit long-term as a corner or a safety, but it appears that he will be the safety, the starting free safety to open the season. He made some great plays last year. There were growing pains, as is the case with most rookies in the defensive backfield, but I think the Cowboys are really hoping that he steps up and has a big year, because the reality is the Cowboys are going to win games because of their offense, and it appears that they're going to lose games because of their defense. The defense appears to be the weak part of this team, though I think some people hope that the secondary can kind of make up for what appears to be right now a lack of a pass rush and a really average at best linebacking core.
Last one for you here, Jared. And Jared Sandler from 105.3 in Dallas, our guest here. As you go through the final days of the preseason, you get closer to the start of the regular season, Jared, what's the one thing you're still looking for out of this team?
Well, you know, I guess, from a defensive side of things, just because that's still the big question, the Cowboys really need someone to step up as a pass rusher. You know, you look at the defensive line, they got two good interior linemen in Tyrone Crawford and Terrell McClain, but they need a guy to step up. Unfortunately, DeMarcus Lawrence is not going to be available at the beginning because of suspensions. And Randy Gregory, same case. Greg Hardy, they didn't bring him back. So they lost a lot of depth. A lot of people thought that going into the offseason last year that the D-line would be a source of strength and depth for the Cowboys. That's just not the case. So Benson Mayowa is a guy they acquired in the offseason.
Yep.
I think a lot of people believe that he can really maybe take a big step for the Cowboys and be their sack leader just because he should be, in theory, available for the whole year. But I think just figuring out what exactly is going to happen on defense up front. Even though the Cowboys have an okay linebacking core, we referenced that. We kind of know who's going to be in what spot. Same with the secondary. It's still the D-line that needs some sorting out, and I think there's a lot left for that group to accomplish. And then, on the offensive side of things, I think that second wide receiver battle is a legitimate competition. Right now the incumbent is obviously Terrence Williams, but Bryce Butler keeps making progress, mm-hmm. and it appears that a guy like Devin Street might not even make the team. So that would be the thing that I'm most looking forward to on the offensive side. And then a final thing, Ronald Leary. What are the Cowboys going to do with Ronald Leary? He's a guy that appears to have some trade value. He doesn't appear to be a starting guard at this point, with Lyle Collins probably assuming the guard spot on the left side. The Cowboys have had discussions with other teams. They do have needs, as do most teams at this point in the season, so it'll be interesting to figure out whether or not the Cowboys do actually come to any sort of agreement with any team to trade Ronald Leary, who's expressed the desire to start in this league, and I think on most teams he would be a starting guard.
You find him on Twitter, at SandlerJ, the letter J. Jared Sandler, our guest from 105.3 in Dallas. Jared, appreciate it as always. Talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, brother.
Jared with us. Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick, as we go around the league.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your offseason been?
It's been great. As usual, too short. But it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos' quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff, and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since the, Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback. Let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, look, the old adage is if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits into the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far, and that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if. That's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. but there's some potential. It looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good, because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy, but if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott. This is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, you say that, people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy, but obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer. So he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Brady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year, hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Well, I don't think so, particularly when we're talking, talking out of both sides of the mouth, when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte, and how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult, and that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand, and if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network, we're at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing about who are the teams that are going to surprise us? And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat? And well, that division's on the hot seat because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year. You go, how can a first-year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better. And obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on a hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think it, no doubt Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a drop-back passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle is an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclassman.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week, and it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.